This is an Enterprise Times podcast. I'm Steve Brooks, and I'm here today with Klaus Michael Vogelberg, CTO of Sage. Michael, can you tell us a little about yourself and your role at Sage, please?
So I'm the Chief Technology Officer. I'm responsible for the overall technology architecture and technology strategy and solution architecture at Sage.
Can you give us a high-level view of the Sage technology architecture and how you see it moving forward?
Sage today operates in three different market segments. We call that the startup segment, the scale-up segment, and the enterprise segment. And we deliver effectively solutions in three domains: the accounting domain, the payroll and HCM domain, and the payments domain. And we do that in about 60 jurisdictions, 60 countries. So that gives you a little bit an idea of the scale and Sage's global footprint. We deliver solutions with about 2,500 colleagues in product engineering. In order to really sort of make sense of that kind of diversity, I create a bit of a sort of a structure around that. When we looked at our product portfolio, some of which, of course, was historically acquired, what we sort of first did was that we took actually a bit of inspiration from Amazon. And you'll probably sort of remember that Andy Jassy, so the head of AWS, frequently recalls that actually one of the defining moments of AWS was when Amazon decided, in order to deal with the complexity of their own e-commerce and very monolithic system, to basically create a set of basic services such as storage or compute, in order to create a truly scalable cloud infrastructure. And out of those kind of basic services, of course, came clearly the by far leading cloud platform and also an incredible innovation platform. And of course, partners working on that platform have itself become multi-billion dollar businesses. And so when you sort of apply those sort of same ideas to the world of Sage, then what that means is that actually you need to think of basic services for tax returns, for VAT submissions, for banking, for application integration, for payroll. And so that is kind of what we call the Sage Cloud ecosystem. So think of it as a set of microservices. And what that allows us, for instance, is to really drive time to market, but of course also significant efficiencies within our own organization. So that was, for instance, one of the reasons why we were able to ship simultaneously releases of Sage One and Sage Live in several countries earlier this year, because of the ability to actually use the core Sage Live or Sage One proposition and then connect it to compliance services, to banking services within the Sage Cloud ecosystem. So that's kind of the foundation which our technology strategy and our product architecture is based. But with that kind of foundation, sort of in a similar way as it sort of solves a lot of the, shall we say, mundane problems, of course it now creates also a platform for innovation. And the way we frame innovation is innovation, obviously technology innovation, needs to have a customer purpose. So it's really important that we sort of think about it from that perspective. But we cannot just talk about customer value either without actually linking that back to technology. So I think those two things go in pair. And so what we have done is we've basically defined four interlocking themes that sort of describe our innovation thrust. Two of them are sort of articulated in a more kind of technology-oriented way, and then two of them more in an application-oriented way. So the first technology themes are, it is firstly around Sage AI. What are the opportunities to apply AI and machine learning in the world of Sage? And the second theme is collective intelligence. And then the two application-centric themes are the future of the accountancy practice and profession and the finance office, and then the innovation in the movement of capital and money.
Taking one of those, there's a lot of confusion out there about what machine learning is and what AI is. How do you see that, and how does Sage see it? Because people are often describing one as what is actually the other, and vice versa sometimes.
I mean, I suppose the starting point is that AI is first and foremost an umbrella term for all sorts of intelligent, smart technologies. And of course, some have said that AI is always machine learning. I would sort of say, well, there's perhaps a bit more to AI than just machine learning, but machine learning is certainly a huge opportunity. I think the other thing which is really important in the context in which we operate is that there's a kind of overarching secular trend. There is clearly consumerization of AI technology. And I think we see this with technologies like Amazon's Alexa, which are just a bit of fun to use. But actually, I think the most important aspect is that it actually makes this kind of technology non-threatening, it makes it fun, and it actually brings it to many households, and it makes it normal. When we then look at that, at the opportunities around AI, I mean, there's clearly, the first is around new types of interfaces, conversational interfaces. And we talked, of course, earlier on in the keynote at Sage Summit here about PEG, the chatbot. And it is clear that actually intelligent interfaces, AI interfaces, so to speak, can actually really revolutionize how we interact with accounting, with payroll, with business processes more generally, irrespective of whether you're a core user, whether you're the FD of a business, or whether you're just simply a customer or supplier or employee of that business. Clearly, there's a sort of conversational AI. I think that's another important thing to call out. There's perhaps a difference between a conversational UI, conversational interface, and conversational AI. I think the difference is that happens when you connect a conversational UI, which of course itself is powered, the natural language recognition that is powered by AI, but when you actually connect it to AI processes in the background. And that's kind of where things probably get a bit nebulous, but the way I often is described to actually debunk this a little. So if we sort of think about, let's say, what would an AI bookkeeper, what would that be? What does that represent? So maybe a good way to look at it is to take some learnings from the automotive industry, who's quite advanced in that kind of mission towards the autonomous vehicle. And when you sort of look at an autonomous vehicle, I mean, the first thing you probably notice is that actually it doesn't really look all that different to a vehicle, a car, as we know it today. So you still have very much the basic building blocks. However, probably the one key difference you would find is the car has APIs, so what we would call in the software world API-fication of a product. So for instance, that is one of the reasons why hydraulic steering was replaced by electric steering, obviously to then have an API. And what then happens is actually you create a set of services that specialize on one particular thing. So you create, for instance, a service that just simply watches out for big animals and objects getting into the way of the car. Or then you build another service which actually just simply has the ability to follow a lane. You build basically gradual sort of these services, and you build these services initially first actually not to have a fully autonomous vehicle, but you actually first create those services to support the driver. But it all builds ultimately up in the sort of pursuit of a fully autonomous vehicle. Now, if you take this kind of idea to our world, to the world of accounting, now what that firstly means is in defining what the AI bookkeeper would actually have to do is we don't have to look so much at what does the accounting software today do. I mean, obviously it needs the APIfication, but basically, of course, it will still be double entry, it will still have the VAT and all of that. But we need to sort of focus our attention to understanding what the bookkeeper, what the human being actually does. And that's kind of where we can then sort of say, okay, when we sort of start to sort of look at specific tasks, how can we actually now turn those into intelligent services? So for instance, could we define a banking bot that actually downloads statements, that does the coding and the reconciliation? Or can we think of a cash flow bot that actually analyzes the cash flow situation of a business? Or can we think of a continuous auditing bot that basically just does what a good bookkeeper does all the time, which is he watches out for irregularities? And that's a way how you would gradually deliver on this vision. And of course, back to your question, a lot of that is initially machine learning.
Taking one thing in there, you talked about your cash flow bot. How would you introduce, or would you then introduce, deep learning into that cash flow bot so actually it can give back more business advice and insights to the business owner? Is that the kind of direction it will go in?
Yes, and maybe that's actually a sort of a good segue to collective intelligence, because of course Sage serves mostly small and medium-sized businesses. One of the things about gaining these deep insights, spotting, for instance, particular patterns, is usually only possible if you have large data sets. Now, of course, the problem is a small business doesn't really have large data sets, whereas a large organization has, and I suppose we all recognize today that entire businesses have been built just on the concept of data. If you think about a business like Uber or Airbnb, or even if you think about a business like Amazon again, their retail business, it is a business which heavily relies on the learnings from those data sets. So how can a small business sort of compete with that? What we believe is what it can do is by actually sharing data with the community, using basically the intelligence of the collective to actually gain those kind of insights. So it's a very important topic actually to address. And obviously it is something which actually needs, I mean, in the context of data privacy and so forth, a lot of consideration. But in principle, that's the kind of idea to, for instance, sort of recognize, well, there are seasonal patterns. Have you actually recognized that your sales are up in this location when you have certain weather patterns or other, let's say, the impact of fiscal policies? You can use the sort of same collective intelligence, for instance, to deal with the problem of late payments. As a small business, you probably have little visibility over that a large customer of yours might actually be a large organization, might be someone who actually constantly sort of pays late. But in the collective, you can actually have that visibility. So we believe that sort of Sage has an important role to play as a facilitator and as a steward of that kind of collective intelligence.
One of the new technologies that are out there, popular technologies that people talk about besides machine learning, is blockchain. Where does Sage interact with blockchain? Because it's clearly often seen as financial and it's used now in the supply chain, but I'm interested to hear where you're working in blockchain at the moment, where you see the potential is for Sage to engage with it.
Blockchain is effectively trustless trust technology. So it solves this old problem of actually, well, Steve, if you and I interact commercially, how would we actually ensure that we both recognize the same version of the truth? And of course, that can be done in two ways. That can be either done through a third-party trustee, which is what you often, of course, use in, for instance, if you think about large commercial transactions. Or it can be done by you and I each spending a lot of time in basically reconciling each other's view of the truth. And of course, accounting is very much just that. I mean, my accounts payable are your accounts receivable and vice versa. So in a sense, it's probably, I mean, if you look at this kind of problem of trust and the solution blockchain promises, it is a kind of game-changing at a conceptual level. And you say, well, okay, for centuries, basically, accounting hasn't actually really changed. We have obviously computerized the processes, but it hasn't actually sort of fundamentally changed. So blockchain might actually have the potential to do that because it solves the problem of trust through this very clever, I suppose, the crypto economic algorithm sort of it implements. So if you sort of think about that in a kind of more tangible way, I mean, one way, for instance, one use case would be that we put every exchange, if I send you a sales order, if you send me an acknowledgement, if you send me the invoice, if I send you a remittance statement, to basically put all of that on the blockchain, and there are obviously ways of doing that, to put that on the blockchain so that if you need to do an audit in your organization, you can actually audit that. Your auditor no longer has to write to me to actually confirm that. and vice versa. But of course, from that, you can then also sort of build up other scenarios. So for instance, we can link it back to the AI vision we've discussed earlier. We could now sort of think, okay, we could probably now have an accounts payable bot that would actually automatically issue payments based on transactions that are secure through blockchain. You could probably use the invoice, which I've acknowledged, as a collateral to get access to business lending. So it sort of sets, if once that very basic problem in a way is solved and becomes machine readable, it can then take part of this kind of virtuous circle of services you can build around it. So it starts with solving a very simple problem, that of trust, and then it actually unleashes a sort of significant potential. And that's kind of what clearly blockchain, or let's say a future evolution of that kind of idea, why that might truly revolutionize our space.
Can you say what timescale Sage might be working towards for that kind of solution?
I think we're today at the stage where we can actually do proof of concepts. The technology partners I work with, the building blocks are essentially there. It is about the application and the user experiences we have to deliver to that, but also the legislative framework in which those can take place. It's probably worth at that point to call out, of all countries, Estonia, because Estonia has solved another basic problem, which is identities. Because, of course, for us, for you and I, to trade securely, we need digital identities, which we all trust. And so you start with the identity, you then move to a technology that basically eliminates the need for a trusted third party, and then you can sort of build some amazing experiences around that.
You've had Sage Live for 6 years, I think, now, and obviously X3 was announced to integrate into Salesforce. The relationship between Sage and Salesforce is clearly growing. I'm just wondering if there's an end game to that, or if you're seeing that actually you're seeing Salesforce as a vehicle to take you not just from the SME market, but possibly creeping into the larger enterprise as well.
You touch on sort of two really interesting points here. I mean, the first one is really around the ecosystem. Before we began with the incubation of Sage Live, we asked ourselves the question, well, are we going to build the infrastructure ourselves? That's kind of what we would have historically done, and build basically everything sort of soup to nuts. Or are we going to build on someone else's infrastructure? Because arguably, of course, the sort of real, the Sage expertise is really in the area of accounting, compliance, payroll, payments, and so forth, not necessarily on building the infrastructure. Yes, that's kind of part of it. It's a sort of means of to its end. We eventually decided that we would actually partner. We sort of said, well, actually, if we partner with a pervasive, with an industry standard out there, well, that creates opportunities for a much wider ecosystem. So we can amplify the impact we're having. Whereas if we build our own infrastructure, then it's probably never going to happen. And if it's going to happen, it's going to take a very, very long time. And so that was the fundamental rationale when we then looked at kind of who are the sort of key players out there. Of course, I mean, Salesforce built this kind of amazing ecosystem with the Salesforce App Cloud. So that was actually really the reason why we sort of decided to actually build on that infrastructure, to basically facilitate the richness of the community to plug into that and to enable the kind of cloud of clouds, so to speak. And I think you're sort of seeing some of that when you go down to the exhibition floor. You sort of see already some of that in action, the creativity and the power that sort of unleashes. Think about all these kind of verticals you might get into it. I mean, we're not an expert in all these kind of special markets. That's kind of what our partners do a lot better. So we think that is kind of the strategically the reason. The other thing you sort of touched on is a kind of question of scalability. And while it is certainly true that Salesforce is a partner that is, for their own application, mostly sort of positioned in the enterprise and larger organization space, it's quite interesting to sort of see that some of the kind of old ways of framing or segmenting markets through technology no longer apply when you get to the cloud. So, I mean, in the past, we would have, for instance, sort of thought about, well, at some point, an organization has its own IT organization, so therefore it's going to manage its own databases and so forth. And so therefore, you need, for instance, a different technology, different product, whether for the kind of desktop world, for the very small business world, than in the medium or enterprise space. In the cloud, that is no longer necessarily the case, and in the cloud you will find that with the kind of right solution architecture, you can actually develop products which can scale from small organizations to very large organizations. And I think that's kind of what you fundamentally find, well, actually with Salesforce products. I mean, while Salesforce is primarily in the enterprise space, but you also have very small organizations who quite happily use that, but you also have the Post of Japan, who is also a Salesforce user. And we sort of see this actually also in the accounting space. And some of the concepts we've actually therefore incorporated in Sage Live, like the multidimensionality, is exactly to sort of think of accounting and ERP not just simply as a ready-made application, but almost as a kind of a CFO platform, so to speak, so that you can actually turn it into what it needs to be in your business context. And if you only have three dimensions, i.e. you only have customers, suppliers, projects, then that's fine. But if you have 100 dimensions, cost centers, profit centers, you name it, then you can actually have that too.
That strategy of Cloud of Cows, does that then spread across, or how does that work within the other products outside of Salesforce for Sage?
If you sort of think specifically about sort of Sage 1 and Sage X3 Cloud, so Sage 1 is clearly in the kind of old world we would have described as a shrink wrap proposition. You take it, you're immediately up and running, you have a sort of chart of account which meets the kind of requirements of a sort of typical business in your legislation, you're up and running within minutes. And what we do with Sage 1 is, when you think again about what I've just said about Sage Live in the context of the accountancy practice of the future, it will be a technology-driven business. We've discussed AI and the impact of all of that, but what we then do with the Accountant Cloud is that we integrate Sage 1 into Sage Live for a Practice Cloud, as we sort of call the addition of Sage Live for accountants, so that Sage 1 can be used as a client ledger and basically plugs in as a kind of a service into that. So that's kind of one way of integrating basically across two different platforms. When you think of X3, arguably X3 was always an application platform-centric product, so it actually incorporates a lot of the ideas, the concepts we've just sort of discussed. And what we're doing there is actually focusing more on the integration with the Salesforce applications and the Salesforce ecosystem, so that you could, for instance, use the core X3 cloud ERP system and then seamlessly integrated with your sales, marketing, or service processes, or that if you need to do some extended customization, or if you want to use some applications from the App Exchange, that you can actually plug those into X3.
Including Sage People, of course.
Including, of course, Sage People, indeed.
Thank you very much, Klaus Michael.
My pleasure. Thank you, Steve.